Hello, sports fans. It's Monday, February 17th. Welcome to Cleats by Dre. I'm Dre. Let's talk some sports. Here we are. Happy Monday. Happy President's Day. Or if you're out in California on the West Coast, happy start of ski week. I'm working with some West Coast folks, and I know my kids are off from school this week, winter break, but they call it ski week out there. So I'm learning. I'm learning the dialects, learning the regions. But today, we're here to talk about the ACC, the Atlantic Coast Conference. At least most of the schools are in the Atlantic. What's happened to the ACC? It's an embarrassing time for both the ACC in football and men's basketball. You see, in football, the ACC went 2-11 in bowl season. 2-11. In basketball, the ACC earlier this year went 2-14 in the ACC-SEC Challenge. And there's some more stats I'll throw at you, but these two events actually happened around the same time, and it got me thinking, there's themes here. And look, in fairness, we're just talking men's basketball and football, right? We're not going to talk lacrosse, women's basketball. The Irish have a heck of a team. We're talking about the revenue sports. And I realized now I might have to start clarifying that, because I got to look at numbers as to how much women's basketball is making, which is quite a bit. But we're talking men's basketball and men's football. So what we're going to do here, we're going to first start with just reflecting on why does the ACC matter? How bad has it been? How did it get into this situation? And how do I think the ACC gets out of it? Where I'll give my suggestion for an alliance to survive and adding one last school for this thing to revive or nosedive. We're Ryan Tommen. Let's go. So first, why does the ACC matter? Why should we care? The conferences are pretty made up, right? We really care about the schools, right? I care about my alma maters. But over time, you know, there's a bit of pride at stake, right? You think of a conference, you think of a team, you think of a group. I root for, especially when conference season is done, both in football and basketball, I root for the other schools to do well. It reflects on us, right? But the ACC matters for me. It has a special history. And I'm going to focus on basketball first. I've said before, right, I grew up a Big East fan. I grew up outside of New York City. St. John's is my team. My sister went to Syracuse. When I stepped onto campus at Duke University, I came in as a Big East fan, but you know, I had appreciation for Duke, and I quickly went to the side of the Blue Devils. So Big East had its time in the 80s and 90s, but the ACC was right there. And see, my fandom started in the 90s, so I can't really speak too much before it. But you know, while the Big East was having battles and producing NBA players, the biggest game was always Duke, North Carolina, regardless if you were an ACC fan or not. The games were always in primetime, even the weeknight. I remember it wouldn't just be on ESPN. It would be on ABC or it would be nationally televised. They'd tune in for the pregame introductions, which they don't always do. And the games, they always lived up to the billing. It felt like a different animal. I remember, like, in basketball practice when I was in high school, like, everyone watched the Duke-UNC games. Didn't matter if you had a dog in the fight. And you add to it, you know, other kind of strong teams from the ACC. I mean, of course, you go back to NC State and the Jim Valvano run in the 80s. I'll talk about it more in a second, but the future pros that both Wake and Georgia Tech produced in the 90s. And it had this feeling of like a really tight regional kind of conference that you were like, okay, the ACC played basketball and they won titles. And, you know, it has a special place. And a quick stat that we'll do, right, and courtesy of Brett Friedlander from Saturday Down South, who did an article recently about the fall of the ACC. The conference sent at least one team to the Final Four every year from 1988 to 2002. That's 15 straight years. And they produced 8 national champions in a 19-season stretch from 2001 to 2019. You know, you can make arguments that maybe depth-wise, some of the other conferences were better, but that stretch, ACC was stacking championships. And by the way, that number of 8 goes to 10 if you include current members Syracuse and Louisville when they were back in the Big East. Now, when you get to football, traditionally not as strong of a football conference, but the conference claims 3 of the last 13 national titles, FSU 2013, Clemson 2016, 2018. Doesn't count a Miami team that has quite a reputation too. So, you know, both these lenses of the conference have been down. But the ACC matters. It's one of those conferences. Do you think, let me ask you, do you think the Pac-12 mattered? The Pac-12's gone, folks. You know, the Pac-12 was one of those conferences, too, one of those regional conferences, had a defined space. It couldn't survive. It's gone. It won't be talked about 10, 20, 30 years from now. And look, no one might care, right? We care about our schools, but I think you care about conferences too. I think there's something about a region of a country that matters. So let's get into talking about how bad has the ACC been? Let's start with football. I mentioned 2-11 in bowl season, which is quite a feat. Yeah, the ACC was down this year, right? In the final rankings, the final AP rankings, their top 5 teams were 12th, 14th, 18th, 20th, and 28th. If you think about it, right, they did have 2 teams make the college football playoffs. But they were also the 11th and 12th seed. Clemson snuck in because they beat SMU. And SMU's got its doors blown off by a Penn State team that, you know, lost in the Final Four. Clemson was kind of close, still lost by 2 scores to a team in Texas that lost in the Final Four. Down year. And look, you got to give Clemson credit because they've been really carrying the flag. And they had a 5-7 year run where they were no doubt one of the top 3 programs. But that's not happening anymore. Dabo's not adapting. We'll talk about NIL more, but he's not leaning into the transfer portal for sure. They're not showing that they can be a perennial title contender. FSU has had one of the worst years in its history. Miami's spending a lot in NIL, but not quite stacking it up to real results. So, you know, Georgia Tech has a national title in its past. Not a lot of schools breaking through. Virginia Tech's always been on the outskirts. But look, it is, when you stack up the conferences, I mean, I'm not so sure ACC is the 3rd best conference. You could honestly say the Big 12 has more real college football depth. It's a shame. We go to men's basketball. That 2-14 record in the ACC-SEC Challenge, where Duke honestly squeaked by an Auburn team, and I think Clemson beat Kentucky handedly, but 2-14, I don't know what to say, guys. The overall non-conference winning percentage of the ACC of 652, it's worse since 1968 to 1969. That's 50-plus years. The title drought, there's a little bit of a title drought, right? They haven't won a title since 2019. That's actually the longest title drought since 93 to 01. And if you look at the current rankings, it's tough to find a lot of teams in there outside of Duke, right? If you go by KenPom, the top 5 teams are 2, that's Duke, 23 and 27, which is Clemson or Louisville in some order, and 48 and 51, which is UNC and Pitt in some order. Just as recently as 2019, there were 5 teams in the top 14, 1, 4, 7, 13, 14. 2015. 2019 was Virginia's year, right? 2015, Duke won, but they had ACC had five teams in the top 17, 3, 6, 9, 10, 17. Go back to 2004, there were six teams in the top 22. That's when Maryland was still here. There's no one. They're done. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about why. But this is a down mark for this conference, this once great conference. I've got, you know, so the next question, right? How do we get to this situation? I've got I got three-ish kind of reasons. I'd be curious anyone else had them and wanted to, you know, hit me on the socials. The first one is about realignment. And they've been, ACC has been expanding, but realignment has brought quantity, not quality. There's been dilution, but not solutions, right? And a quick sidebar for me, why I'm always interested in conference realignment, it awakens my inner commissioner. And I might have talked about it on one of my first podcasts where I grew up wanting to be a commissioner of sports leagues. I was a commissioner of online sports leagues, and I even... You know, my parents would remember in my room, right, my bedroom growing up, you know, 10 to 12 years old, had a basketball hoop. And what I would do is I would play games against myself and I'd keep the stats and I'd make different tiers, almost like promotion and relegation. I picked like the top like 24 teams in college basketball at the time. I'd put four in Division I, four in Division II, four in Division III, almost like their seedings. And the way I'd play the games, it would basically be, I'd have a three-point line behind my bed. I had a car bed, and the two-point line was in front of it. And if I shot the ball and it went in, that's obviously points for the team that had the ball. But if I missed the shot, and they got the rebound on the fly, that's an offensive rebound. I could do a putback. But if the rebound hit the floor, that's a change of possession. And so I'd have to take it back beyond the three-point line and do a next play. These games would be timed. The buzzer would go off. I'd keep score in my head. And I'd track, all right, who would win? Who would get relegated? So anyway, I have this organizer in me. And I just think it's cool. I mean, because you don't get realignment in the pro sports, right? They're a little more organized, a little more buttoned up. Well, this concept that, you know, these conferences and the wild, wild west of college sports for so many years and it's still going on, you know, it's a zero-sum strategic game. It's almost like I'm playing Sid Meier's Civilization for everyone that knows that game out there, right? We're dividing and conquering. There's a novelty. But look, and the ACC has been expanding. I actually think the ACC kicked off the latest round of expansion in like 2004-05, right? They reached into the Big East. They gutted the Big East. Round one, they took Miami, Virginia Tech, and Boston College. At the time, we said, wow, especially Miami and Virginia Tech, this is going to be a strong football conference. Oh, my gosh. And BC was something, at least in basketball. But those schools have produced nothing. Obviously, no titles. BC was good in basketball for a bit. Wow, have they fallen down. Miami's just trying to come back in football. They've never had any success. Those teams have not made the playoffs. So that was the first foray. Then in 2011, Syracuse and Pitt joined. Wow, this is going to be great for basketball. Not much. Syracuse made two Final Fours, kind of as Cinderella runs in 2013 and 2016. Not much. Around 2012, right, Notre Dame agrees to join in the non-football schools. They agree to schedule five football games. Not much for basketball. I mean, some good teams, really good teams in 2015, 2016. No Final Fours. Around 2013, Maryland leaves, which I'll be honest. Maryland was a big part of what I think made the ACC great in basketball. Some great rivalries. A title in there in 2002. They haven't done much in the Big Ten, for what it's worth. And Louisville comes in. Fresh off a title, they've done nothing. I mean, they've been decent up until recently, but nothing. And now we got 2023. We got Cal, SMU, and Stanford, where quite frankly, the ACC was the last, you know, last resort, just trying to scoop up some teams because they finally realized this is imperialism going on. But look at all those schools they've added: 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Dilution, not solutions. No titles, very few like Final Fours or playoffs, semifinals. And that's contributing to just a down product and less marquee games and less success against other conferences. We focus on football and basketball there. Number two, we'll focus just on basketball. Legendary coaching departures have absolutely hurt. Let's go through the list. And actually, I think it dates back to 2016. Jamie Dixon left. I think he left for TCU. Pitt was a really strong basketball program under Jamie Dixon. In 2017, Rick Pitino was fired from Louisville. They haven't been quite the same since then. In 2019, Buzz Williams left Virginia Tech for Texas A&M. Another example of a coach leaving for a Texas school. Then you got the retirees, right? Roy Williams retires before the 22 season. Coach K retires 2022 also. Jim Boeheim retires. Mike Bray is kind of forced to retire. And then this year, Tony Bennett retires. Now you got Jim Larranaga retiring. Leonard Hamilton retiring from Florida State. And even those coaches, I mean, especially Larranaga and I think Bennett and Hamilton, they haven't been great the last few years. Had not been able to adjust. So, like, this is a lot of turnover. And these schools have not exactly hit it out of the park with the replacement hires, right? John Shire seems to be figuring it out at Duke. Hubert Davis does not. He had some early success. Syracuse Adrian Autry has not figured it out. Louisville already messed up with Kenny Payne. Like, the schools are not exactly backfilling with big-name coaches. They're not exactly showing they can go in and steal some of the top coaches from the other conferences. So that's a little bit of a warning sign. But also, these legendary coaching departures, they've led to legendary talent drops too. And I focus on some of the older guard of the ACC here. And I'm gonna be critical, right? I'm going to start with Duke. Duke's had incredible one-and-done talent, and they're great this year. But we have to be honest. Duke has not been consistently great in the last 5 years like they were in the 90s and early 2000s when we had Leitner, Hurley, Hill, Battier, J. Will, Boozer, Redick. There's more. That all played 3 to 4 years. Go to UNC. Vince Carter, Anton Jameson, Jerry Stackhouse, Rasheed Wallace, Raymond Felton, Tyler Hansbrough. Outside of Hansbrough, those are all really strong pros. UNC doesn't produce pros anymore. Where's that talent? Wake Forest had Tim Duncan, Chris Paul, and Josh Howard. Georgia Tech in the 90s, Mark Price, Kenny Anderson, Stephon Marbury, Chris Bosh in the 2000s. And then we talked about Maryland. Maryland had all-time great teams with Steve Blake and Juan Dixon and Chris Wilcox. They're gone. So there's been a talent drain. And maybe it does come down to money. Money leads us to our third reason, right? You know, there's been a rise in importance of money with NIL, right? Last 4 or 5 years or so. Are the ACC schools, have they been well positioned to take advantage? I'd argue not. We'll look at football first, right? So 247 Sports, before this last football season, put out a list of the schools most likely to be spending the most on NIL. They use a proxy, because NIL money isn't exactly transparent. They use a proxy of donations the school received in the previous 17 years. This ranking's all public schools, so we'll talk about private schools in a second. But among public schools, the top-rated ACC school was 10th in the country. That's Florida State. Virginia actually was 13th, which is shocking because you know they're not spending on football. They've been like a feeder ground for Notre Dame, for Christ's sake. Clemson is 17th, Louisville's 20th, UNC's 30th with Bill Belichick and all, which I'm not going to touch on that sidebar here. Virginia Tech 34th, Georgia Tech 44th. The point is you don't got any schools in the top 10. You know, that's why there's a commitment. That's correlated, right, to no ACC teams in the top 10 this year. In the private schools in the ACC, right, they're Miami, Duke, Wake, SMU, Stanford, BC, and Syracuse. Of those schools, really just Miami is out there spending. And actually, if you looked at On3, they rated the top 15 NIL collectives. I guess they got some data and insights. Miami's actually fifth overall. FSU is seventh. Louisville's ninth, which is interesting. Louisville. They seem to keep getting high transfer quarterbacks, as does Miami every year. They got Cam Ward. Now they got Carson Beck. I don't know what's going on with FSU. There's a theme here, though, and I'm going to touch on it after I talk about basketball, because in basketball, I think it relates to recruiting, right? I mean, Duke's bringing in top classes, and it seems like there's a budget there for that. But there's also a brotherhood, right? There's a system. But geez, in what world recently, you know, a number one prospect like AJ DeBanza picks BYU over UNC? Well, NIL deal between $5 to $7 million. It's almost like the ACC schools. Backwards approach. Either they can't afford it or they're being stubborn. But, you know, the NIL movement has benefited the schools that have a lot of alumni and a lot of hungry rich donors. Think Texas, Texas A&M, Oregon, Ohio State. These ACC schools are a mix of, sure, some really big public schools like Florida State and Clemson. I guess Louisville's big. A lot of smaller schools, though. Wake Forest. Can these Northeast schools like BC and Syracuse keep up with NIL spending? I don't know, but I think this is a contributor. This is why the ACC has really become a second-class conference. And that leads me to suggestions. For how does it get out of this rut? Well, see, the good news for the ACC is, at least temporarily, it seems like it's going to stick together. A big moment was end of January. ESPN picked up an option to extend its TV deal through 2036. So a little bit of safety. I mean, ESPN had some requests, right? Get more big games going and maybe some other things. And on the other side, the two behemoths in football, Clemson and Florida State, they've been filing lawsuits to try to figure out if they left, basically, would they be able to keep the rights to their home games? That makes them more attractive to other conferences. Everything I read is saying that they basically would have to pay exit fees north of $150 million due to the ACC's grant of rights deal. I think those guys are going to stay. And I honestly can't see UNC leaving without those other two leaving. So let's assume no one leaves, right? Let's assume this ACC stays for now. And what do they do? How do they reinforce their position, right? This is warfare a little bit. This is strategery. So here's my path forward. An alliance. An ACC Big 12 alliance. Yes. They're kind of equals in the pecking order. You got to give the Big 12 credit, right? They've been out there fighting their butts off. They lost Texas and Oklahoma after losing A&M and Missouri years ago. But they're fighting. They're scooping up teams. They scooped up Cincinnati. They scooped up Houston. They took Colorado and Utah back from the... Then they grabbed Arizona State from the Pac-12. They're playing the game. ACC is just kind of sitting around. Got stuck with Stanford, Cal, and SMU. Yeah, they're equals on that level. You know, they're not necessarily equals by type of school or academic rigor, but we're talking sports right now. They're certainly it's equals in basketball prestige. And honestly, they're second tier NIL spend also. And look, make no mistake, the Big Ten and SEC, they're plotting right now how to set up a football playoff that's most suitable for just those conferences. So the ACC and the Big 12 desperately need each other to keep a four-conference system intact and resist a natural push to a two-conference system, which all the major sports have, right? The American League and the National League, the AFC and the NFC. It's human nature to think of two. ACC has to keep it at four if they want to stay alive, if they want future generations uttering their letters. So what does an alliance look like? Number one, for football, go where the SEC and Big Ten won't. Schedule huge crossover games dynamically. Give me a mid-November, early November, ACC Big 12 matchup where the conferences play each other. Pair the first place teams, the second place teams, the third place teams, etc. Do it at a few neutral sites if you want. If you want to throw the bowl game, bowl guys, an early buck, you always like to do that. Could be at neutral sites or it could be on campuses. But that way, you know, you're kind of giving the playoff committee something to think about, you know, and you're getting big matchups. Or number two, go even more radical. What about that winning idea from the 2012 San Diego State NBA case competition that Mike James and I lost? What about that idea that I talked about earlier in my own bedroom playing basketball against myself? Promotion and relegation. There's really very few must-have rivalry games within these conferences. Maybe Miami, Florida State, I don't know. Is Kansas State, Kansas a big one? Arizona State, Arizona, I guess. But like, do a real schedule merge and have an A and a B subconference each year. Just put 9 teams in the A conference. Have a true round robin there. So next year, you could have Clemson, BYU, Iowa State, Arizona State, SMU, Kansas State, Louisville, Miami, and sure, we'll put FSU in there just because they think they're big dogs. So 8 of those teams, not FSU, they're in the way too early top 25. That's 8 teams. And while you're at it, ask Notre Dame to play 4 of its games from that crew. More big games. Now look, that subconference, it still feels kind of weak if you maybe compare it to the tops of the Big Ten and the SEC. Not exactly storied programs in Kansas State and SMU and Iowa State. But they play good football. And people will watch good football. But, you know, the point is, go against the dilution that's happening in schedules and get big games week after week. Get people watching them. Put them on Thursday night. Again, gain more respect when it comes to college football playoff time. Make sure you get multiple teams in. And the last part of this alliance, because basketball's in my heart, of course, you know, ACC should drop the SEC from from that challenge that they do. You should have no interest in growing the SEC's footprint, especially in the same recruiting regions. Make it an ACC Big 12 challenge. Houston, Kansas, Arizona, I think Gonzaga could join the Big 12 eventually. Focus on growing the visibility of the Big 12 teams over the SEC ones. You need a true alliance. And look, there's some really story programs in there that would still make for some great games. One last suggestion I'll make while we're at it for basketball. Nothing to do with Big 12. A bit more imperialism, please. Like Coach K suggested, go grab UConn from the Big East. They want to play football. And you'll get one of two outcomes out of this. One, more primetime college basketball matchups with a big-time coach and Danny Hurley, love him or hate him. And UConn could be a perennial contender, right? It could be one of those teams that is going to be a matchup. It's going to put up for you in the postseason, which you're lacking right now. Or the second one, which is my more favorite option, similar to what the ACC did to once-proud basketball programs like Syracuse, BC, and Pitt, you killed them off. You kill off the Huskies. In the case of UConn, that would be great, I'll say, as a Duke fan. So there you have it, folks. How to fix the ACC. Alliance of the Big 12. Take in UConn. Great matchups, or you kill them off. Either way, you got to do something because you're at risk of becoming a mid-major. All right, folks. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll talk to you next week. If you have any fans, any friends that are big-time college sports fans, please definitely give this pod a share to them, okay? We'll talk to you next time. Bye.